Okay, this hour we will take your phone calls with Massimo Mazzucco about some of his work, and that includes the 9/11 documentary and Cancer, the Forbidden Cures as well. So we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, back we are with some phone calls here in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Of all the things you've done, the cancer documentary, the New American Century, the true history of marijuana, the 9/11 work, which area stands out for you as really probably the biggest?
Which
area of documentaries you've done?
Well, I find certainly the Cancer, the Forbidden Cure is the most important one because it involved so many people. As I said, you know, where statistics now, where it's almost impossible to find somebody who doesn't know somebody who has cancer near them or who has them themselves. I mean, it's really a plague at this point. Okay. And also, it kind of contains all the other problems, because if you look at the historic part in the film, and you understand how we came to the situation in which we are today, also many other things become clear. I mean, Donald Rumsfeld was at the same time, he was selling weapons to Iraq, and he also had big shares in big pharmaceutical companies. Those things don't happen by coincidence.
No, there are no coincidences. Everything happens for a reason, doesn't it? Okay. It's kind of sad. Okay, let's take some calls. East of the Rockies, Diana's with us in Crystal Beach in Canada. Hey, Diane, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling all the topics. There's, I don't know, a disease or illness called C. difficile. It affects the intestines and I think colon from overuse of antibiotics. Does this become a form of cancer or deplete your immune system, then become cancerous?
Unfortunately, I'm not a doctor, and I cannot answer this question. I mean, it's not. If this had been part of my research, I would probably tell you what I have found, but I have not covered this. I cannot, unfortunately, answer this question. I'm sorry.
Have you had, you know, mainstream medical doctors come at you and say, "What are you doing to us?" Or do some of them say, "You know what? I work with alternative medicine, too. I do both."
You know, Simoncini is a truly, truly, truly allopathic doctor. He's the most orthodox doctor, oncologist you could find. He cannot stand alternative therapies. This is the funny part of it. He cannot stand. When I talk to him, when I try to find, for example, a connection between his theory on the fungi and the Gerson therapy, which has to do with the acidity, he rejects it. I don't even talk to him about that stuff. You know, I don't even want to hear about it. He's a totally allopathic, orthodox doctor. And this is the paradox. The problem is that he has found a cure that you cannot patent and you cannot sell because sodium bicarbonate costs 5 cents an ounce. So this is the only problem. Had it been gold instead of sodium bicarbonate, you would have the medicine already out for sale for $1 million a bottle.
If they can make it. That's right. So true. Next up, we go to Dwight in Detroit, Michigan. Dwight, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Love the program. I'm unfamiliar with your guest, even though I love what he's saying. First off, I'd like to tell you I'm one of the youngest cancer patients, Beaumont Hospital, a local hospital around here.
Yeah, I know the hospital well.
Melanoma.
Yeah.
For stage one. I've been taking shark cartilage pills for quite some time. I was diagnosed when I was 12. I'm 32 years old right now. There's not a sign of that in me. And, you know, I hear you keep telling your guest, why isn't this on mainstream media, the cure for cancer? And, you know, it's a billion-dollar a month industry. If you look at the globe and how I truly, genuinely feel that the cure for cancer is suppressed, so that we can continue receiving cancer and continue getting treatment for cancer. This is, if the cure for cancer was found, or actually, I believe it's already around, if it was given, it would absolutely bankrupt the whole system, the whole globe. Not really a question, just a statement, but I just wanted to say that I genuinely feel in my heart that if the cure for cancer was given, it would screw the whole financial
system. Well, and not only just cancer, it would have ramifications for many other ailments, as people would then start saying, what natural supplements will work for me?
Yeah, because you would probably find that.
I feel that if we move into a new era, everything needs to be redone. from the way food is distributed to how the food is produced to the financial system. I don't believe that there's one thing that's been created that is okay if we were to move into a new era. I think everything's at the peak. I think we're stretched to our limits. And I think everything should be burnt down, reorganized, and completely start anew.
How did you get involved with shark cartilage? How did you know how to take that?
I was going to ask the same question.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was literally taking this shark cartilage pill by the time I was 13. My mother's a nurse, and she knew right away. I mean, I guess I was blessed by the knowledge of my mother, but...
Perfect.
Yeah, it's one of the only animals that doesn't have cancer, and... I don't know if it worked for me or not, because my surgery, they basically removed all the cancerous tissue, did a skin graft on my Achilles heel, and then I took the shark cartilage pill just out of sheer paranoia and my mother telling me that this is a viable supposed cure. I don't know if it worked or not. I'm knock on wood. I've been fine. And
well, something worked.
Shark cartilage became known exactly from a book written by one Dr. Lane titled Sharks Don't Get Cancer. He started off from the same exact observation. He says, wait a minute, why do these animals never get cancer? And he finally figured out that in their cartilage there's this compound that actually acts as an anti-angiogenic, meaning it blocks the cancerous cells to grow blood vessels. It stops them from growing that. It's called, and the funny part, I mean, the ironic part is that pharmaceutical companies in the dark are trying to patent a similar mechanism to shark cartilage. I have found patent applications that actually say we are trying to patent a mechanism similar to shark cartilage, but they're trying to make it chemical in laboratories so that they can finally patent it and sell it. So they themselves recognize the quality of the cancer, of the shark cartilage. But until they will replicate it in the lab and will able to put a dollar sign on it, they will not tell you.
You've got some good information about marijuana use as well. Tell me about it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, what I did with this is the last documentary I just finished, the one on marijuana. And I put it out because I would like this to become a tool for next year when in California, probably the Proposition 19 will be proposed again, and hopefully it will finally pass. So I put together both the history of marijuana and the real reasons why cannabis was forbidden, which has nothing to do with the drug aspect of it, but it has everything to do with the industrial aspect of it. And we've added a few some interviews, very recent and cutting-edge interviews to the most advanced doctors who are actually studying the effects of marijuana against cancer. Marijuana turns out to be a great, great, great agent against cancer because it can, especially brain cancer, because it can skip through the defenses of the brain. You know, there's a blood-brain barrier that most chemical compounds cannot pass. Marijuana, because being a lipid, THC, because being a lipid and being oily, it can make it through. It can actually reach the cancerous cells, and it has been found and shown scientifically that it can select and kill cancer cells while it leaves the other cells untouched. So the difference between chemotherapy and the marijuana and the THC compound is that the first one kills everything. It's like entering the room, you know, there's a terrorist there among 10 people. You kill everybody, and of course you kill the terrorist, but you also kill the other 10 people.
Yeah, you did.
In this case, it only selects the terrorist, it kills the cancer cell, and leaves the remaining cells alone. So there's a great future there for medical marijuana and cancer.
Oh, we've got a message in from David from Portland, Oregon. He says his wife went to Mexico for breast cancer, and he says they killed her by selling hope and not results, and this is how they stay open. And he said they're snake oil salesmen. So I guess you have to be careful.
Well, this is what Simoncini says a lot to me sometimes. He says, you know, sometimes people come to me, they're desperate, they're in the last stage, they have tried everything possible. And then they kind of blame it on me because I did not save them. I don't think that I don't know which clinic this person's wife went to, and of course I'm sorry for what he had to go through and she suffered. But normally I would say that if a clinic stays open long enough, and the Gerson clinics, for example, has been open for 20, 25 years now, 30 years, or the Hoxie clinic has been open for 35 years since 1974, so it's like more like 35 years now, and they keep curing patients. It means it works. I mean, you would not have business, because these things work only by word of mouth. Since you cannot advertise and you cannot make statements, the only way for you to get new patients is by cured patients who say, you know, I was cured, so try it, and they convince other people. Word of mouth. This is also one criteria that I think is very important. When word of mouth is very important, and testimonies from one person to the other is very important, because in these cases you cannot advertise. So you know for sure that if the clinic stays open and keeps having patients, it's because somebody got benefit from it and talked about it. I cannot answer the specific case for this person, of course, but I don't know.
Let's go to Norfolk, Virginia, east of the Rockies. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Yes, Massimo, you're doing a great job on two areas, the 9/11 and this cancer thing. I hope you'll become a permanent fixture at the Coast to Coast, because you're working with one of the key figures on the planet, quite possibly the most important man on the planet right now, George Norrie. But now, here is the problem. I'm going to give you information. You're going to need to distribute this information to other people, because it's dangerous to have what you're going to have. The 9/11 mystery has been solved. It's been solved here on this program. There are the key people, and you're going to have to listen to this again so you get their names and so you get their interviews and so you get the information. But the key people are Judy Wood, mm-hmm. who explained why she believes that Tesla technology was used to bring down those buildings. The next thing you're going to have to know is the forensic economist Richard Hawkins, who did an interview he gave his interview to Ian Punnett. Now, he tells what the financial connection was. But the other thing about Judy Wood, you have to understand, what she told George Norrie in her recent interview with him was that there was a hurricane parked in the Atlantic, which had been the longest-lasting Category 5 hurricane ever. Now, what you connect that to is this. The film that was done in the 80s about the World Trade Center, the documentary that told why a windstorm with 80 miles an hour wind came close to bringing down that building, and which gave a total analysis of it in animated form that showed the building collapsing in its own footprint, one floor at a time, and it told how many seconds it would take, and it matched up exactly with what actually happened. So the theory was this. The theory was that when that hurricane was parked out there, they knew that their day for that building was coming down. It was a Category 5 hurricane, not an 80-mile-an-hour wind. So they knew it was coming down, and the technology that could bring those buildings down could fit in a man's pocket, according to some of the best researchers on Nikola Tesla technology.
Okay.
So your key is you got to go to Judy Wood, you got to go to Richard Hawkins to get the financial connection. The union, the teachers' unions, which are he's with 9/11 Truth Scholars, and Ian Ponnett and George can connect you with them. Now this is dangerous information, but I'm going to, at another time on this program, reveal to you why you should not condemn the people that were involved in this, and that's going to be a shocker, and you will then understand why I say George Norrie is the most important man in the world right now.
Okay.
Well?
You want an answer to that, I guess.
You can't answer that part.
Answer is, I gave it before in a way. I know Judy Wood's work, and my position is that as a citizen, we don't have the capacity nor is it our job to find out what really happened. It's a very treacherous territory because the moment you start choosing one theory against another, you immediately inviting both the partisanship within the movement, which is something I do not like at all. I wish it never started. And on the other, you invite on yourself criticism from the debunkers who then put the onus of the proof, the burden of the proof on you. Oh, really? Prove it. You know, this is not, this is a mechanism. I'm very familiar with this mechanism because I've debated 9/11 on Italian television quite a few times. And I've seen that every, as soon as somebody says, for example, it was a missile that hit the Pentagon instead of a plane, suddenly you have the debunker say, oh, yeah, how could the missile do this and do this and do this and do that? And suddenly the burden of proof is on you. And this is wrong. It's a trick that I tend to avoid, and I wish also other people avoided in the movement. All we need to do, this is my position, of course you don't have to agree with that, is to prove that the official version is false, is a bunch of lies. After that, it is up to those who lie to us who tell us what they used.
Massimo, do you think that people who believe in this one world order believe it's happening? Do you think we can win out eventually and get this stopped?
Yes. And that's what I meant before when I said we are facing some very interesting years in the future, in my opinion. I think that the whole system, this system cannot be changed piece by piece. It will collapse at some point very, very, very quickly. And that will happen, in my opinion, when the level of knowledge, average knowledge in the people, in the population, reaches a certain level after which there's no return. At that point, when let me put it this way, and without being presumptuous or arrogant, if everybody in America knew what you, George, and I, and this person on the phone together know today, for example, the pharmaceutical industry would be dead tomorrow.
That's true.
It will be automatic. It will be a mechanism by which you don't even have to go against. They will lose credibility completely, and they will find themselves without the leverage to continue to apply their power.
Well, but look how their tentacles go. I mean, look at this scare with the H1N1 virus, this pandemic that never was. Yet they sold hundreds of millions of doses of vaccines.
I tend to see the empty full part of the glass in this case. I see, for example, this pandemic as the first episode in which the forgive my French bullshit did not work. People didn't buy into that really. Of course, they managed to sell vaccines everywhere, but people realized that this was not really what they were saying it was for the first time, and this was thanks to the internet. Nurses started to rebel to that. They didn't want to take the vaccine. Doctors didn't want to take the vaccine. In Italy, even we rejected the purchase of the vaccine altogether, which was a big scandal. But our Ministry of Health said, no, we don't need this. It's really unnecessary. There is no that kind of danger. For the first time, I think that internet spread enough information on the intent of hoaxing everybody, and people were able to defend themselves. They did not really achieve what they wanted to achieve. Maybe they'll try again. Maybe they'll be smarter next time. But this was a victory, in my opinion.
When we come back, I want to get your take on the push to exterminate people on this planet. And we'll take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Is there a huge spike in apocalyptic predictions? Tune into our next Coast to Coast program with Jonathan Zapp as we discuss that and some other issues, prophecy, and the end of time. When we come back, we'll take some final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Massimo, much travel for you? Do you go to many spots?
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Much travel for you in the future?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand.
Do you have much travel?
Oh, travel. I thought you said trouble. I was saying hope not. Well, no, not really. I mean, I might be going to the Toronto hearings in September for the 9/11 Toronto hearings.
Yeah, tell me about those hearings.
They were set up by an attorney, I think is an American living in New York, and they plan to collect, to invite from all over the world all the experts that will give the best testimonies on the scientific proof that has been found against the official version of 9/11.
Okay, let's go take some final calls. We'll go to Richard in Madera, California. Go ahead, Richard. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me, George.
Sure.
Massimo.
Hello.
Hello, Massimo. Right now at this time, can you give Coast to Coast listeners any factual evidence that you have supporting that Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld failed in their oath to protect American citizens by masterminding or by heading up the attacks on America?
Well, factual evidence, you mean trial evidence. There is certainly one element, for example, Dick Cheney. The official version tells us that once Flight American 77 turned around and headed back to Washington before it hit the Pentagon, they completely lost track of it, radar, primary and secondary radar. Contrary to this, we have a testimony from Norman Mineta, the Secretary of Transportation, who actually told under sworn statement that Cheney basically knew that there was an incoming plane into Washington. So Cheney has certainly lied, at least on this particular issue. For Rumsfeld, there's one very strange fact. He is the one who changed the intercept procedures in June of 2001, even though we hadn't had a hijack in the United States for at least 25 or 30 years, I think. On June 2001, for some reason, he decided to change the intercept procedures so that every order of taking off or interception would have to go through him before. And, of course, you know, what happened on 9/11 is that the controllers from Boston and from Dallas were calling the Pentagon to get authorization to scramble flights, and they could not find Rumsfeld.
That's so interesting.
That is certainly, if it's not a proof, it's certainly an indication. You know, I mean, I would like to hear this person explain why he changed those procedures. And by the way, after September 12th, the procedures were put back the way they always had been for the last 25 years.
To their original
absolutely,
conditions.
Absolutely. It was just, you know, just for the time being, so that every scramble order would have to go through him. And guess what? He was not available. We have this recording from a former Boston flight controller named Robin Horden, who says, we called on American 11, we called the Pentagon, no answer. On United 175, we called the Pentagon to get scrambled, no answer, no answer, no answer. They didn't pick up the phone until basically when American 77 was headed toward the Pentagon. So this is how you can explain why our defense did not intervene, because Rumsfeld was not available to okay the scramble of the jets.
Would you be in favor of a brand new 9/11 type investigation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It would have to be probably, I would suggest, international, absolutely transparent. But it's, you know, it's a dream that will never come true.
No, it'll never happen.
No.
You know.
But that is what is needed, and that's what people should demand.
Next up, let's go to Sherry in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Welcome to the show. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I wanted to just ask a question about the alternative cancer treatments. I was wondering, Massimo, if you had looked into Royal Raymond Rife.
Oh, that is one of the chapters that I had to leave out and with my heart broken.
Why?
Because, well, the film is very long. It didn't have enough room for everybody. But this story of Royal Rife was incredible. He had put together a special microscope in the 1920s that had 3 or 4 or 10 times magnification power of regular microscopes. And with that, he could actually observe cancer cells that he would hit with a special frequency, sound frequency, and he was able to explode the cancer cells and only the cancer cells under the microscope while the rest of the cells were left untouched. And he has his films. It's incredible. He has his own footage.
They took him away too, didn't they?
Well, they just never, it was just, you know, treated like a charlatan. It was disgraced. It was discredited. And, it's very simple. Once you control the mainstream media and the information and the newspapers at the time, it's very simple. The information just does not get out. And we had to wait for the Internet to learn about him. I didn't know anything about him until the Internet came about, for example. But, yes, this is a very good example of an incredible cure that was suppressed and would have been incredibly interesting to pursue instead.
He died in 1971, and of course they accused him of health fraud.
Oh, see, when Simoncini was accused of fraud, that's when I started becoming interested in him. Because I knew by then that this is the sign, this is the mark of the beast.
He had stepped on too many toes.
Yeah, it's obvious that, you know, a real charlatan, nobody wastes time with a real charlatan. They leave him alone. You know, you don't have to waste your energies against a real charlatan because he's harmless. If they attack somebody and so viciously, it means that he's onto something interesting.
Let's go to St. Louis. Anthony, take it away. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Anthony.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I just have a quick couple points I'd like to hear your comments on. First, about the 9/11, it just seems kind of weird to me that, I forget his name, it escapes me at the moment, but he was a Hispanic gentleman who was a janitor.
Rodriguez.
Who went on a tour talking about the explosions in the basement that not only killed one of his friends, but stranded most of the people in the elevators down there before the planes hit. That seems kind of weird. And how that other tower, Tower 4 or whatnot, went down in the same controlled demolition style as the other two, despite being hit by a plane. You know, that I'm just stating facts here, and that doesn't really add up to me. And another thing about our government is it's a proven fact they've lied to us for years. I mean, going back recently, just with the Vietnam War, they said that the Vietnamese had sunk our destroyer when it later come out it was a boiler explosion. So with this whole Osama bin Laden thing, when it seemed like the country had reached its boiling point with this administration and a change had to be made, all of a sudden we had bin Laden, and then he was dumped off the back of a boat like it was the Godfather 2 or something. I mean, it just seems like they're lying to us in every way possible, and I don't know if people are eating it up because they believe it or they're eating it up because they just hope the government wouldn't do that to us, but it's clearly obvious they will. So I'll just take your comments offline. Thanks, guys.
Okay, sure thing. And also, Building 4 did get hit by a lot of debris from the collapse of the South Tower, but it's Building 7 that went down. That's the weird one. Go ahead.
Yeah, the janitor you were talking about, name is Rodriguez. His story is particularly interesting because he deposed in front of the 9/11 commission, and he told the story about these explosions that happened before the first plane hit the first tower. And, of course, he was shocked to learn that none of his testimony was actually published in the 9/11 commission report. This goes back to what I was saying before. The technique used by these commissions, like the Warren Commission, the same, they discard every piece of evidence that would go against the solution that they already have chosen, which is, in this case, it was an Islamic terrorist attack. It was not an inside job. So in order to conform the conclusion to the fact that you have, you need to discard the facts that are, go against that conclusion. It's as simple as that. I remember, if I may quote an old Arabic saying, it says, honest is the person who is willing to adapt his way of thinking to reality. Dishonest is the person who tries to adapt reality to his way of thinking. I find this the key method to read all these actions. They are trying to adapt the reality and make it fit to a preconceived conclusion, which is, it was not an inside job.
And by the way, with Rodriguez, I want people to also know that he bravely led firefighters up the stairs, unlocked doors as they climbed in, and helped hundreds of
survivors.
Well, you
went in back in three or four times.
Yes.
And he's the last alive person out of the tower before it collapsed. He is a real hero.
He was.
Of course, he got medals from Bush. But then his testimony disappears from the 9/11 commission report.
Well, he eventually tried to sue President Bush at the time and Cheney and Rumsfeld, but it was all tossed out of court.
Yeah.
Let's go to Sarah in Arcadia, west of the Rockies, California. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, George.
Hi.
I was so interested in your guest because in 1978, I guess, I was a guest at the compound where Dr. Richardson lived. And it was kind of a mystery. We were there for a family reunion, and I wish this was the first time I ever understood that someone could be persecuted by the government. But he had gone into hiding in Northern California with his family. I mean, it was a lovely place where he was, but he had just had an office closed in Reno, and they had barred it. But he had said that the FBI had met him at the door, and he wasn't allowed to practice from his clinic in Reno. And I think he was treating patients on the side there with the, it was the apricot.
Yeah, the B-17, the late trail.
Exactly. And yeah. Yesterday, I just had thought of his name again, because I was wondering, why were we there? And what, that was the strangest thing, but there was this aura of secrecy. We had to go in this gate, and the gates were locked after we got inside, and I understood he was a wonderful man, and so I couldn't understand why the government would be after him for practicing his craft of being a doctor, and he later died. I think he died of a heart attack, but just your story tonight made me understand once again that there have been people that have been really persecuted by the government for practicing and helping people who had cancer, and he really believed in that treatment. So.
Yeah, this is the common factor I found in all the stories that I tell in the DVD. It's they all have the same kind of background. And again, it all started making sense to me when I was following the Simoncini story, and I found out that he was also being persecuted. At that point, everything just clicked, and then I said, you know, I have to do something about this. I have to show how this is actually a pattern. It's not one case or two cases in which you could object. Well, maybe it's not exactly the way you're telling the story. When you have 10, 12 cases and they're all the same pattern again and again and again and again, then you know that it is a system that is in place that tries to avoid cures from being known and being propagated.
I wish an independent lab or university would study these kinds of cures and come out with some independent reports.
Well, this is the other problem. Up until the 1990s, at least half of the research was in the hands of universities. 1980s.
But who funded them?
Well, universities had their own fundings, and they were relatively free. But slowly, in the last 30 years, because the research has become more and more expensive, all the research now, and I'm saying all the research, is in the hands of the same pharmaceutical companies, who also then control the FDA, which approves their medicines. So the doctor, is, and let alone the patient, but even the doctor, is left without an actual possibility of checking whether what he's being told in the studies by the pharmaceutical industries is true or not, because there's no checks and balances. It's all done by the pharmaceutical industry. They will do the research. They will submit it to the papers, medical papers, scientific papers, peer-reviewed, which they control. And then they will control the FDA and push for one medicine to be approved or the other one not to be approved. It's completely everything in their hands.
Let's go next to Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's Jack's turn. Jack, go ahead. Thanks for holding.
Oh, thanks for having me on, George.
Sure.
Hello, Massimo. I'm kind of. You mentioned you helped your dog, and my dog has a walnut-sized tumor on her mammary gland. She's a small dog, and it just. With everything you're saying, it seems like there must be some simple thing I can do to help her. I was wondering if you could help me out with that.
Well, my only suggestion is spend time on the internet, research the possible cures. I'm sure that there is one that's good for him. I could not give you an advice, nor I would, even if I knew the solution, because I don't think it's a responsibility I could take.
But you gave your dog shark cartilage.
I did, because mine, I knew exactly what he had. And I knew the problem up close, and I was told by those who knew about it that after I did the operation and removed the main tumor, this would most likely stop the metastasis from growing, which is exactly what happened. As I said, 2 years later, the veterinary wanted to take x-rays, and we saw this four or five little balls of fat that were like in the middle of the liver, and they were all surrounded by gel. That was the action of the shark cartilage. But I cannot tell you in your case if this would work as well. I mean, do research. I'm sure that there are a lot of solutions out there. So if you put in enough time and research, I'm sure you'll come up with the right solution for him.
Other than putting an animal down, what did they do when an animal comes down with cancer? I mean, do you spend the money and give it chemo and radiation? What happens?
I don't know. In my case, I was told, you know, I can operate your dog. It's going to cost you about $1,000, but 2 months from now, this was the literal words out of his mouth, but in 2 months from now, she would be dead anyway. And I remember answering, but, you know, I don't know how much my dog's life is worth per day, but let's operate first, and then let's see what happens. And luckily enough, then the shark cartilage worked, and she ended up dying of heart failure of old age, actually.
Yeah.
She died. She was more than 18 by the time.
Well, that's a great age for a dog.
Yeah.
Let's go to Jeff in Ontario, Canada, on the international line. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Long-time listener.
Thank you, sir.
I had a question and a story. I know you mentioned marijuana and medical use. Well, I kind of tricked my grandfather that has level 5 stage Parkinson's.
Mm-hmm.
He has really bad tremors and that. Well, I had made a marijuana capsule, and I ground it all up and I put it in and I gave it to him. He didn't know what it was, but within half an hour, 45 minutes, believe it or not, the tremors stopped. And when he realized it, he started crying. It actually stopped the tremors and his freeze ups.
Did he know that you helped him?
Well, he still has no idea what it was. He asked me, and I told him it was a herbal remedy because he's really old-fashioned,
yeah,
and he doesn't really believe in marijuana as a miracle drug.
Oh, he'd go nuts if you told him what you did.
He would probably flip, yeah. But I'm trying to talk him into getting medical
marijuana
because he's able to ingest it. He isn't able to smoke it, which they tell you not to. But
well, you definitely find him somebody who can do that. Massimo, we are out of time. I want to thank you. Keep in touch with us, will you?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much. All his work on his website, most of it is in Italian, but you can decipher it if you go to the link at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesor, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.